back and bigger than ever. It's the unofficial 40 from Soonerscoop.com. Now, here's the entire Sooner Scoop crew. Kerry, Josh, Eddie, and Bob.
All right, we are back. It is another unofficial 40 podcast right here from Soonerscoop.com, brought to you by DeadSoxy.com. And we welcome in the entire crew as we get ready for a huge weekend that will entail recruiting and transfers and people coming in and going out. And to welcome us in is all the crew, Josh, Eddie, Bob. They are here. And I got to be honest with you. You guys have been killing it. Lots of information out there. I have been getting texts, you know, and DMs left and right, and just notifications from the War Room group, just all the stuff that's floating around. And you don't just have, you know, OU getting involved with players. You have coaches being hired. You have Caleb Williams, Mario Williams, all this stuff floating around out there as well. And I know there's a big list going on, but basically I told you guys before the podcast started, I am worthless. We are operating on basically a shoestring with technology as far as it's concerned. Everything is being moved to the office. We could barely even do the podcast today. Josh is going to sound not quite as lovely as usual. So I will turn it over to the crew that actually does work for a living, you guys. Josh, first, let's start with you. Just kind of set the scene for us and what OU is going through right now and what they've got in store this weekend.
Yeah, you know, you mix in the blend of portal guys that are coming in, which I believe, and Bob, I know, knows the exact number. I believe it's seven. I mean, over the next 72 hours or whatever, it's just a massive list. There's already guys. I know, got it confirmed just a little while ago that Michael Trigg and Jackson Dart are currently en route to Oklahoma. They're going to do their visit today. So the
Is
two
it
USC
just the one
transfers.
Day, Josh?
That's my understanding. That's okay. What it sounds like. Is it just going to be kind of in and out, same as Ole Miss yesterday? You know, and Bob, to me, that's the interesting part, is how different this is than what you and I are used to from a recruiting standpoint, yes. Where it's 48 hours and these guys are really soaking it all up. These dudes, it's just, you know, like Eddie and I were talking about it yesterday. It's like they just said, you know what? We did really well with these Zoom meetings. We're just going to go with that and make it 20, you know, like we're going to hit all the highlights and then just get out of town and, you know, go on to the next thing. So that's what I've noticed. And then obviously you have a lot of official visits, you know, kind of rumors and talk going around. What's interesting is, one of the names that I think everybody wants to talk about is Josh Connerly, the big Rivals 100 offensive lineman from Washington that everybody is reporting is coming in. I'm on that boat as well, but I can tell you there is absolutely a set of people that are like, let's just see if he gets on the plane, you know, kind of not that he's given any reason to believe that he won't, just kind of, he's been a tough guy to track. And I think a lot of people are just kind of waiting to see if that will come to pass.
It's insane to think that, like, just how much, and Josh, we were kind of talking about this yesterday, just as far as like how much has really changed over the last couple years, specifically with the transfer portal. But I mean, we're talking about like massive wholesale changes. Obviously, Dylan Gabriel's coming into Norman to start his semester this weekend. He's coming in from Hawaii. You have the early enrollees. I guess is quarterback probably the easiest place to start, because as we're recording this, Chuba Purdy is wrapping up his
he's done.
I guess
done.
Is it, are we calling it an official visit? Like,
no, I don't, they don't have a, they just go whatever they feel like, so I'm just saying visit.
Okay. I like that. I like that, because it's like what exactly are you trying to learn when some of these guys, and you know, Bob, we were talking about this before we started the,
by the way, I did clear this up this morning, cause I wasn't sure. And somebody asked me the question, maybe you guys have already discussed this, but like OU can't pay for his visit. Like with the transfer portal, you are able to pay for those visits for them to fly in. You pay for their flights and wherever they stay. I don't think you can pay for their family, kind of like recruiting trips. Or no, you can pay, I think, now with recruiting trips. So, yes. But you only get five of them if you're a transfer, and then everything else is on your own dime. So, like, Caleb Williams is going so many places, like, he's going to have to pay for some of them. But I did find that interesting that, Transfer portal visits are the same as official recruiting visits where the school can pay for them.
But it's not in terms of you don't get like a host. You're not staying with like a player, right? Like, it,
well,
like,
there wouldn't be any players on campus.
Sure. That makes sense, too. Yeah. That makes sense.
Well, just, no, and you don't have to stay, you know, the 48 hours, like as we're sure. seeing, as like Jeffrey Johnson, the Tulane defensive lineman, is going Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Sunday. I mean, that sounds like insanity to hit four schools in 5 days, but that's exactly what he's done. He did LSU. He's in Norman right now. Then he's doing Missouri, and then he's doing Michigan. And that is just crazy to think that you can learn everything you need to know and be able to compartmentalize everything and be able to make your choice. But that's what a lot of these kids are doing.
I would love to be a fly on the wall as these visits happen, as far as not necessarily what they're presenting to the players, because I think it's pretty obvious. I mean, I'm sure that Levy is going over what they want to be able to do offensively. Venables gives a little bit of a future outlook for the program, but the quarterback thing is so fascinating because you have Chuba Purdy, as you'd reported, Bob, coming in. You have Jackson Dart, as we've reported on the board, coming in as well. And oh, by the way, I mean, you still, I guess, technically
have Caleb Williams, Eddie,
like hanging over everybody. Like, bottom line, if Caleb Williams picks up the phone today and like something happens and he says, I want to go back to Oklahoma and play, I think we all agree that they're not saying no. Like, where do we even want to begin to unpack like how this whole thing is going down at the quarterback position?
I don't even know where you start.
That's a perfect way to say it, isn't
all right,
it?
Like, we're good.
Yeah, like, I mean, what? Like,
it's a WTF moment for sure.
Yep.
Guys, the thing we should start with the thing that will please all of our listeners the most. I think there is a world in which Lincoln Riley gets neither Jackson Dart nor Caleb Williams.
Yeah, that's the most important thing to start with.
Agreed.
Which would be awesome.
I actually agree with that.
He chases away his quarterbacks. He does have.
A week ago, no way.
Yeah, but the perfect situation: you chase away the quarterback that you did have, and don't end up getting the one that you thought you were going to get.
Yep.
And maybe this is the Williams way of screwing Lincoln Riley, who screwed them.
The long con from Caleb's side.
I guess there is a part of me that thinks like, wouldn't he already be committed to USC if that was going to happen?
You think so? Unless USC
it's
just
like the Venables stuff. It's like, I feel like we're back at the Thursday of that Venables week where it was like, okay, is it really going to be Brent? Because what else would they be waiting on?
Or have we arrived at that place where the money that Carl Williams wants is just not there?
I think can both be true.
I definitely think it was true with Oklahoma and Georgia.
I don't think there's any question that there was an overestimation of the market. And guys, we talked about that when this happened. Like, it was never going to play the way we were hearing they expected it to. And you know, that happens, like that's understandable, but at some point, like, they're getting up against it. I mean, you're getting to this point where these schools, you know, as much as they want Caleb Williams, this isn't recruiting. You know, I say in recruiting all the time, you know, this guy, he can wait until school starts or he can wait until the fall. If you're a quarterback and you're in the portal, you're looking to get all, you know, get in the spring, get in as quickly as
learn
possible,
the system,
start taking reps, doing all the stuff you've got to do. And, you know, I know people say, well, Caleb Williams knows what USC is going to do. Yeah, sure, fine. But these other schools are going to start evaporating because they've got to get off the carousel. They've got to have whoever their quarterback is going to be, whether it's Purdy, whether it's Caleb, whether it's Jackson Dart. And, you know, it's the same few schools all competing for these same, you know, small group of guys.
It's,
you know, Josh, we talk a lot about the connection with Caleb and Mario. Is it the same with Jackson and Michael Trigg, or are we overestimating that sort of package deal?
I don't know. And I've talked to some pretty good sources on this. I don't think it is certain, but I definitely think that's what they would prefer. I think they both recognize that, you know, the other one is very talented and it would be good to go somewhere where you have, you know, someone that you're familiar with. You know, if they choose to not return to USC, they could go to Oklahoma or Ole Miss or any of these other places and have, you know, that easy familiarity. So I don't think it's as direct as, you know, Mario Williams has basically come out and said he wants to go play with Caleb. Now, the Texas visit makes that interesting because we've heard, you know, there's no way Caleb Williams is in play at Texas with the Quinn Ewer situation. So I don't know what to make of how that's going to play.
And I'd take it a step further and say that as of yesterday, I talked to some people that believe from the Mario Williams side, anywhere in Los Angeles, whether it be USC or UCLA, is probably too far for Mario Williams. I mean, forget that. I don't forget. You don't forget. But I think people do forget. Kids from Tampa, Florida, Orlando, Florida. It's like, I don't know. That Bob and I were talking about that before we started. It's like that whole situation is bizarre. It's almost as bizarre as the Caleb Williams stuff pertaining to Mario Williams.
I think I have a bold prediction for Caleb Williams.
Okay.
I think the only school that can wow his people are the people that put together the stuff that I saw this year with Kayvon Thibodeau. I think Phil Knight could end up wowing the Williams family and Nike.
Has he not already wowed? I mean, Bo Nix is up there, though. And I'm not saying that he wouldn't start ahead of Bo Nix.
Yeah, come on. That's Bo Nix.
Just like, but you kind of get where I'm coming from. Like,
but Bo Nix was up there before. Was Caleb Williams even in the portal when Bo Nix made that decision?
No. That was a while ago.
I mean, are you going to tell me all the things? And here's the thing. All the stuff we've heard about Dan Lanning and how aggressive he is and how aggressive he's going to be. You think that he's not going to make a play here? That he's not going to put something together? I'm just saying.
This goes back to relationships because Kenny
Dan Lanning, yeah.
And
remember,
Bo Nix is just like Levy and Dylan Gabriel, but you've got to do what you got to do.
And remember, everybody was pointing out how Caleb Williams followed Dan Lanning when his name was out there as the, you know, possible head coach at Oklahoma.
Sure.
So there is a relationship there. I'm just saying.
None of us could confirm when that follow happened, though. Right. I still think that was
No. I think everybody agreed it was from back when he was in high school still. But that's the thing.
Put it more bluntly, Oregon's not going to be afraid to cheat over the next couple years.
Or maybe they're just going to tell Caleb Williams, you know what? If you come in here and you start and you win Heisman, we'll make you the first college athlete with his own shoe line.
Well, and Eddie, you're forgetting, I mean, from Kayvon Thibodeau's comments that, again, Oregon is a well-stated place of higher learning. I mean, always been a very well-respected university. You know, it's a Jimmy Lake special. So there is, you know, scholars like Colt Lyerla, you know, guys like that.
That's a
that
name
really,
I haven't heard in a while.
Yeah, that really went to Oregon for the chance to get a degree. So
Oregon would make things interesting.
It makes sense, Gary. You're not wrong. Like, I've heard nothing like that, but it makes sense.
I'm not saying, like, oh, I've heard this is happening. I'm just saying,
sure.
Like, if this is going to continue to be, you know, a shopping spree, you know, or a shop around or whatever you want to call it, I could see that developing.
I find the most interesting aspect of all of this to be, like, fast forward to Sunday. Say the Jackson Dart visit goes very well. Say that he's ready to commit. Would Oklahoma, I guess, in a way, I don't want to say that they're, I get the feeling there are people down there that are ready to tell Caleb Williams, thanks, but no thanks. From
I think
a football
you have
perspective,
to.
It doesn't make sense.
I think you have to. Didn't Lincoln Riley, I mean, I don't know this for a fact, but it would seem to me that Lincoln Riley lost Jackson Dart because he wasn't willing to commit to, you know, him being his quarterback the next year.
Well, I think we all read between the lines when Jackson Dart entered the transfer portal on Monday was the fact that you go, okay, he knows that Caleb Williams is coming, which I think kind of in my mind accelerated everything to thinking, okay, Caleb Williams is going to be committed to USC.
And then the uniform thing came out.
And that, yeah, and then that came out. And like, I've talked to people that are, you know, loosely affiliated in Los Angeles, and they don't think that it's just a done deal that he's coming. Now, maybe that word hasn't leaked over to them yet, and maybe there is something going on. But like, this idea that Caleb and the team Williams are just locked in with USC, I don't think that that's the case as we record this on Thursday. Do I still think that there's probably a pretty good chance that's where he ends up? That's the only thing that makes sense to me right now.
Problem is that we don't know what makes sense to the Williams family. We don't know what they're really looking for. Like, what's the end game there?
It depends on what narrative you want to. I mean, if you listen to a national reporter, it's development, 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 which, you know, I think that it's basically debunked that
hammered that home enough. Yeah.
Like, it's one of those things. The more you say it, the less I believe it. I'm sorry. That's the way that it feels to me. So I guess in a way, what I'm trying to ask is Jackson Dart in Oklahoma Sooner by the end of the weekend? and on top of that, how does Dylan Gabriel take that news? Like, I would love to know what those conversations are like behind closed doors. Like, I think that they were probably pretty upfront with Gabriel and that, what did we say from day one? They're taking two quarterbacks. They wanted to.
Or they were getting Caleb Williams back at that point, and they didn't know for sure.
Sure. That's also another possibility. Like, it kind of feels like they feel.
Well, the whole.
And they being people in Norman feel like they have a pretty good chance of getting Jackson Dart.
The whole rolling the dice thing with Dylan Gabriel, though, that kind of made it open. Like, I don't know if this is my job, but I'm going to take a stab at winning it.
Sure. Oh, yeah. Then, the tweet that he sent out and stuff. Is that what you're referencing?
His commitment tweet. Yeah.
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 And then I start reading too much into things by the Central Florida transfer receiver going to the Bruins instead of going to the Sooners. I don't know if OU ever showed any interest. We just all thought, oh, well, he's going to follow Dylan. But then he didn't.
Yeah, I can see that being a situation of him just, he's from that area. Doesn't he have a brother that plays at UCLA? Like, that could make sense. I think that we probably jumped the gun on that just because it made so much sense that he went to Central Florida because of that Gabriel connection.
Guys, is there any position that's confused you more? I mean, I know we're kind of talking quarterbacks, but the way OU has handled wide receivers in the portal has been very surprising to me. It's been very passive. And I would have thought maybe more than any other position, it's where they would be aggressive.
We thought Antoine Wells might be a name. Mm-hmm. Kieran Lacy. I did OU ever make the offer, or is he just hell bent on being LSU or Auburn? Those are two names that are like, okay, let's follow every single move that they're about to make because OU's got to get involved. And here we are. It still doesn't feel like they actually are. And Wells committed to Beamer on Monday, so now he's off the board too.
Is that because they? I don't want to say necessarily like what's in the portal. Is that because they feel comfortable with what's coming back? I think Bruce Feldman does a great job, but it just doesn't seem like there's a ton of wide receivers ready to leave.
They need more just based on numbers. And you lose Mike Woods too. You think about who was there for the Alamo Bowl and you're losing guys too. It's like, that is not a deep room by any stretch.
I mean, they've got seven current guys, and three of those seven are Jahlil Farouk, Cody Jackson, Trevon West that have played almost no football.
I'm right there with you, Josh. I thought they were going to attack.
You bring in Nick Anderson and Jaden Gibson, who you've got to think Nick Anderson's like, man, this is perfect. Like, he went to OU largely built on Lincoln Riley and, you know, his brother's connection to the university and all that. But Nick Anderson's almost a prototype for what Jeff Lebby has done offensively. So he's got to think that worked out pretty nicely for me. And then obviously Jaden Gibson's tremendously talented. But I mean, you're just, it's a shocking lack of experience at receiver And when you throw in the quarterbacks coming in, it's a new offense being learned. I mean, there's a lot to process in a short amount of time there.
Yeah, you're almost banking on somebody like a Theo Weiss really bouncing back and having the type of not just season, but the type of, you know, ending to his career that I think a lot of people thought he was going to have coming out of Allen.
Well, I'd say, you know, with Weiss, you feel like he's pretty locked in. I mean, just from the tweets that he's made. I mean, not recently, but early on. And then we still haven't heard anything on Mims that leads us to believe that he's looking elsewhere. Although, with all this stuff, it could happen overnight. I mean, Trell McCutcheon pretty much happened in a span of 2 days. So, well, I mean, here's the
Bruce
question.
Feldman's convinced, you know, half the roster is going to follow Caleb Williams wherever he goes. So,
whoever he's got, that's got to be a USC person saying that.
Yep.
I guess reading this right, and that I just feel like that's one of those things that it's become so vital for somebody that covers this stuff day to day like we do, that from the outside looking in, if I was talking nationally about another program, you would think that there would be guys ready to follow when you look at how important, you know, Caleb was to the 2021 class, just the aspect of the Sooner Summit, everything that was kind of made into that. I could see why somebody from the outside looking in would think, you know, wherever Caleb goes, there's going to be guys that follow.
Here's the thing to me.
But we know that that's probably not the case.
The players did love Caleb Williams. Like, when he came in and played well, like, everybody supported him. They were totally behind him. But I think then when this NIL stuff gets involved in it, it's like, it's kind of like the way the fans feel. It's like, are you with us or are you for you? Like, who are you? Like, are you a teammate or are you a business on your own? Like, that's separate from us. Like, I think that's got to be off-putting for some people. It's like, who's okay? So I follow you. I help you get better. You're going to be the one that gets all the praise and the money and the, you know, accolades out of it. Like, why should I be kind of like your lackey? I want to make a name for myself. I don't know.
That makes a lot of sense, Kerry. It feels like, again, I keep going back to this idea that the way that Oklahoma's operating, it feels like they've seen the writing on the wall with Caleb. It's just coming out as we're recording this that Chip Kelly's expected to sign a new deal with UCLA. I know that there were some questions going into this weekend with his buyout expiring on the 15th, coming up on Sunday. It just feels like the Caleb Williams era is over at Oklahoma. And, you know, I think that there's a lot of people that are completely okay with that, especially with what could be coming in.
I think
is that a good way to kind of wrap that up?
I think
up?
Most like, fans have prepared themselves.
I know
themselves
it sounds shitty,
that
it's just kind of that it is what it is.
It's just like, you know, if you got a dog, I'm sorry, Josh, if you got a dog, it's not doing well. You prepare yourself for the day that you're going to have to put it down. Like, I think OU fans have prepared themselves to lose Caleb Williams.
And Caleb prepared them with his statements after the bowl game.
Yeah. I mean, it's true. It's true.
How many days ago was that, by the way?
The bowl game?
Yeah.
2 weeks.
Yeah. 2 weeks.
Seems like it's been 2 months.
Just over 15 days, right?
2 weeks and a day, right?
Yep.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
Would have been in 2 weeks from last night or Wednesday night.
Insane.
It is insane. 15
days.
What, as far as Dart goes, Josh, and I know he started 3 games. He played in 6 at USC a year ago. Even going back into high school, how familiar are you with Jackson Dart and what he was coming out of, Canyon Springs High School in Utah?
He was a guy that really blew up late because, you know, most of the West Coast, as we all know, just didn't play football in 2020. So Utah was one of the few states that went ahead and did play, and he put together a great season. I believe led them to a state title, if I remember right. At least it was a deep run in the playoffs. I'm a little foggy on actually how it finished, but was a guy that just really took off and got a lot of attention. And I know, talking to some people that watched him, watched his freshman stuff at USC, and, you know, kind of have a feel for him, you know, I guess as a player, as a kid, whatever you want to say, there were very high expectations. There was some real belief that he was going to be the guy. And I know I talked to some people that, you know, we made the joke earlier, or, you know, joke, whatever, guess that, you know, Dart and Caleb don't end up at USC. I know some people that really thought, you know, maybe Lincoln Riley needs to think long and hard whether he wants to get involved with Caleb Williams when he already has Jackson Dart in the fold. That there was that level of belief in his talent. He really impressed some people. And, you know, people will say, oh, he only had so many offers and he wasn't in the top 100. Again, he came on late. He plays in a state that isn't just rife with talent and doesn't have a lot of people flying in to go see, you know, their games and things. So I think there was a hesitance about going too crazy with him. But at the same time, like I said, when you emerge late and people don't see you, you kind of can't make the moves everybody else does. And at quarterback, there's only going to be so many spots available to you as far as his offer list and things like that, because, you know, you can't go, you know, for example, Oklahoma. Oklahoma's not going to go offer Jackson Dart. They already had Caleb Williams. Georgia's not going to go offer him. They've already got Brock Vandegrift. Quarterback, the chips fall so early that sometimes guys like this can get lost in the, you know, kind of in the shuffle a little bit. But like I said, watching some of his freshman stuff, this is a guy that's got a ton of arm talent. He's a pretty good athlete. You know, I'm certainly not saying he's Caleb Williams when he runs the ball, but there's plenty to like there. And I know, Eddie, you had heard some things that this was kind of a no-doubt pursuit for Oklahoma. Once he hit the portal, Oklahoma was, you know, kind of the opinion, hey, we have to, you know, at least see if this guy would be interested.
Yeah, and I would even say that I think that it was a situation, and I don't know how this went down exactly, but I think Dart reached out to Oklahoma, not the other way around.
It certainly wouldn't surprise me. And again, the thing that
it's kind of funny if that's the way that it goes, that we're talking about development with Caleb Williams when Jackson Dart immediately identifies Jeff Lebby as somebody that he might want to work with. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Yeah, no, you're fine. And again, that plays into what Bob was asking me earlier about the Trigg and Dart connection. I have felt like Trigg is very, very interested, and I've had a tougher time getting a read on where Dart is in the situation. And for people that would kind of wonder, Trigg has some family, including a member on our board that, are big OU fans. So he's kind of been inundated with that for a while. I know.
For like the last year or so.
And I know at various points they had tried to get OU interested, and that's where it gets interesting, because OU never really did. And then Lincoln Riley's trying to convince Michael Trigg to stay. And it's kind of like, well, you didn't think I was good enough then. And I know people will turn around and say, well, you know, a lot of that offensive staff still at OU. The offensive coordinator is different. The tight ends coach is different. And the tight ends coach, Joe John Finley, offered Trigg at Ole Miss, and they have some connections. So there's a lot that works for OU in that kind of push and pull between would he go back to USC, would he come to Oklahoma? And I that'll be interesting. And again, if Eddie, what you're hearing is right, and that Dart reached out to Oklahoma, you know, like I said, those two, from what I gather, would like to play together. And if they're both at a high level of interest, maybe that can work out for OU. And, you know, OU fans can get their dream of just being able to kind of say, hey, we're fine without Caleb and move forward and let him do whatever he's going
to
do.
All right, I want to take a little time out. Remind you guys, deadsoxy.com is your place to go, especially now that it's gotten cooler outside. I'm sure you've gone through that sock drawer and you said, man, I really need to replace some of my socks that I wear to work. You can do it with deadsoxy.com, DEADS.
Is there a concern about the tight end numbers?
I was about to say that. You'd go from 2 to 5 in a heartbeat. You went from thinking it was Jason Llewellyn and Caden Helms as true freshmen and they were just going to have to learn as they go, to taking Daniel Parker, more of a blocking guy, Braden Willis announcing he's coming back, and then you could add Trigg. That room changes in a hurry.
Yeah. The part where I think, you know, you have to say, okay, this is going to, you know, we just have to make that work, is that if, you know, say you said, oh, okay, the numbers are just too much. Well, next year you turn around and then you're right back in the same boat with Llewellyn and Helms as your only two tight ends, and you don't know how much experience they're going to get this year behind Willis and Parker. So I think Trigg gives you an easy gap of, okay, and now you can look into that 2023 class and kind of think, you know, like, what do we want to do here? It gives you a little flexibility. And yeah, you're riding a little heavier than you would want to in your tight end room. But with Lebby and some of his reliance on the run game, I'm sure he can find some things that could work. Because Trigg, I mean, guys, we're talking about, you know, wide receiver numbers. You could flex Trigg. You could flex Helms. Like, they're borderline receivers as it is. I mean, they're not pure inline guys.
I talked to Jason yesterday. He did not have a problem with anything that's happened with picking up Parker, with Braden staying, with them looking at you. That was not an issue at all. He appreciates the experience that's coming in so that he can learn from some of those guys. And it's just like, if that doesn't change how I'm going to work when I get there, I'm still going to put in everything I got, and then we'll just see how things happen.
That's Alito. I mean, that's a guy that comes from a program that's like, yeah, man, there's good players. You're going to have to go beat them out, and you're going to have to win. And, you know, they know what it, you know, like, kind of the stuff it takes. And I just think they're kind of wired to compete. And I that doesn't shock me at all that he kind of has a feel for that. One of the, you know, I guess as you look at it, one of the things I kind of keep waiting to emerge is if Oklahoma gets involved in the running backs. And I haven't seen a lot of names that I'm like, oh, that gets, you know, that kind of blows your hair back. And I think with Marcus Major returning, it definitely softened the need a little bit. I mean, four yep. running backs is a pretty good room. You'd like to have one more. Noah Kane is interesting from Penn State. I mean, that's obviously a name that people remember. And I think
did OU cool on him? Isn't yes. that if it wasn't yes. Kane cooling on the Sooners, it was OU moving up. Yeah.
That was always my read. Yeah.
There was a different staff too.
Sure. Sure.
It was not DeMarco yet.
No, absolutely not. And you know, you would think it makes some sense because with Noah and his injuries and kind of the lackluster production, you'd expect, like, okay, the market's not going to be real hot for him, but it's good enough, and he gets to go play, you know, he could come back a little closer to home, you know, play under a guy like DeMarco Murray, kind of earn his way. He's going to have more experience than really any back on OU's roster. I mean, probably even including Eric Gray. I'd have to look at the numbers, but I would think those two are pretty close in that regard. And he's kind of a big power back that fits what Lebby likes to do. I mean, there are things that make sense. I'm not saying I've heard anything, but it's just kind of one of those interesting deals where, you know, and I guess the thing I can't get over, guys, is, do you remember like three pods ago, we were like, well, is Brent Venables going to get involved in the transfer at all? And like, it's the craziest year we've ever seen as far as that goes.
And then, I mean, there are so many people coming in. Is this going to be a lot of, like, it's either or and it's not and? Like, when you're bringing a couple defensive linemen, couple guys in the secondary, they're not going to take them all, right? I don't know how the numbers really stack up. I'm just wondering, like, there's been a couple kids who have told us flat out this is their only visit. Are they really going to take both? Or is all of a sudden that guy is going to have to learn Sunday, oh, crap, I don't have a school now?
You know, I don't know that I have laid out that full story, and we'll wait until post-signing day. But with the whole Jaron Canack situation, I know I've talked with you guys about it. I'll tease it a little bit for, you know, for our listeners. I do a kind of post-NSD thread where people just ask questions. It ends up being 400 posts long. It's just a wild thing that we've done every year for a long time. The Jaron Canack situation makes me think that OU is willing to play that level of tough ball. That if that's what it is, hey man, we're sorry, but you know, you could have jumped on this, you didn't do it, you know, kind of first come, first serve. But I will say the numbers seem to be there. I mean, like, you look at what OU has returning, which is a very, you know, like, we've got them at, you know, my last update was 62 scholarship players currently. And you've got, you know, 17 incoming freshmen. And there's still a few guys like Deshaun White, Brian Mead. I mean, there's a few guys that I'd love to know the final verdict on.
Mead was a super senior.
Okay, then I'm at 61. See, I will flat out own, I cannot keep track of that. Like, I need to live in a world where after 5 years you leave. Like, it is too confusing for me for how that all works, but it doesn't matter. So so again, there's room anywhere from about 7 to 10 guys from the portal would be my expectation. And, you know, and again, my 61, 62 includes Daniel Parker, includes McCade Matower, includes Jonah LaLewis. So, like, I mean, there are already guys that they've already fulfilled. So you're talking about 6, 7, 8 more, I think, are completely within reason for them to bring back. Or I guess add to the roster.
Yeah, and I mean, it certainly seems like the Trey Morrison seems like is he a perfect example of one of those guys? Like, based off some of the notes that you put up, Josh, it seems like he's coming with his bags packed to Norman.
That is very much the impression I got. I love it. I love how blunt he was. You know, for those that don't know, Trey Morrison, grad transfer from North Carolina, as a guy that, you know, you talk to people at North Carolina, one of their more diverse defenders, really defensive backs, smaller guy. I mean, it's kind of one of those things where we'd all gotten so used to the Grinch model of what they were looking for. This is more of a, you know, 5'9", 185, kind of do-it-all type defensive back. And, you know, obviously Brent and that the guys from Clemson being familiar with him in the ACC.
Bingo.
I clearly wasted no time, and they went after him. Spoke to him yesterday for a while, and, you know, it was just one of those things where I'm just going through basic questions, and it was just kind of like, hey, you know, when does your visit happen? Because as Bob and I have discussed, the weekend is becoming like a 5-day window.
I don't have class. They don't care. Yeah.
Everybody, like, yeah, you're exactly right, Bob. You know, college guys, like, if there's no Monday to Friday classes, they're like, it's the weekend. Like, whatever else it is, it's just the weekend. So you keep hearing guys reference it, and then I'm like, well, what day? And they're like, Wednesday. Man, I don't know what planet you're on. That's not the weekend. So, but anyway, and so I'm just kind of talking to him about when, you know, I'm like, okay, how, and I was trying to get a feel for how long he was going to be there. And he goes, well, if all goes well, I'll be there till the end of the year. And I'm like, oh, okay. So, like, I mean, this is just a dude that is expecting, you know, again, I think it's pretty safe to assume that Trey Morrison will be on Oklahoma's roster going forward.
And that was the same type of mindset Wyoming transfer CJ Colden had too. When I was getting in touch with him, like, no, this is the only visit I've got planned. Mm-hmm. And I was like, all right. You know, I don't know how exactly they're working with the numbers. And that's why I'm sort of asking, is it either or, you know, can it be an and where you take, you know, two or three in the secondary instead of just one? But it's interesting. And I think the defensive line with Wingo, with Jackson and Player, with Jeffrey Johnson, that's my other, you know, sort of wondering here. All three seem like they would fit and they're legit and they're logical, but you can't possibly take all three. So where does the numbers crunch start and where does the pecking order begin?
Yeah. Because it really will. I mean, like, to some degree, if you can knock out a couple of guys, then you get into a just best available, you know, like, okay, we have, you know, the basic needs are covered. I would have to think that they'd be willing to take two of the three on the defensive mm-hmm. line, you know, those three guys you referenced. But I'm with you. I don't know how you justify three when, you know, like you said, okay, so you throw in Colvin and Morrison. Well, okay, so now you're at five. And, you know, we're talking about maybe eight spots. Dart, Trigg, okay, seven. So you've got one spot left, and, you know, there are other holes that they clearly would like to fill. And you also don't know who could still pop up late. I mean, Trigg and Dart were late possibilities. Who else could show up? Alabama.
Drew Sanders, perhaps.
Yeah, absolutely. God,
that's somebody I wanted to get into here in a second.
Sure. I mean, so
go ahead.
Then you're locked in, and you know that's a great eight if you could make that all happen. But you know, you wonder if OU would like a little, you know, one more spot here to kind of do something with somebody else rather than taking all three defensive linemen or three or four more defensive backs or whatever they plan to do.
It truly is amazing when you talk about like how much a roster, how much a depth chart can change in the matter of days nowadays, especially with the transfer portal. I mean, we haven't even gotten into how Oklahoma could finish the 2022 recruiting cycle, which, oh, by the way, is now less than a month away from the second signing day. But let's go Drew Sanders, Josh. I know that there is a lot of speculation that this could end up being basically an Oklahoma-Arkansas battle with maybe Texas looking from the outside in. Is that where we need to start with that, with the former Denton Ryan standout?
Yeah, you know, the Drew is just kind of an interesting guy because and I put something up in our Thursday notes right before we got started on the pod, and there is absolutely an overwhelming sense of confidence when I read reporters like, oh, this is fact and this is not. And I'm like, man, even yesterday when I initially said, hey, I don't know if Texas is involved, I said, I'm not certain of anything, because Drew Sanders is one of the most quiet recruits I've ever covered. Even when he was committed, he was never one to talk much. And
one word answers.
Yes. I remember going to do a video interview with him, and he really was okay. And almost from that point forward, you never got anything, any context out of Drew. It was just, yes, I will be there. No, I will not be. You know, like it was just, you know, completely, I guess monosyllabic. Like it was very straightforward. You want to be careful. But the only thing that does seem to be a consensus, no matter who you talk to, is that it's Arkansas, Texas, and Oklahoma. There doesn't seem to be any other real options for him. The Texas thing, I wonder how much is being made just because it's obvious, you know, Steve Sarkisian, Jeff Banks, all the Alabama ties. And I know people will say, well, Jeff Banks was Alabama's ace Texas recruiter. He had a big hand in any guy that Alabama landed from the state of Texas in that era. So there's no question. He has a relationship with Drew Sanders, and that will matter. It's not nothing. At the same time, I don't really remember Drew ever being actively involved with Texas. Like that was never really a thing. I don't get the impression that it holds the special sway for him that it does for some in-state kids that Oklahoma just never can get over the hump about. And, you know, people will say, well, you know, the guys that were recruiting him at Oklahoma, a lot of those guys aren't there. And that's true. But also, you have to remember that he was recruited as a tight end. So the area he is from means he was being recruited by guys like Cale Gundy, Bill Beedenbo. Like there are guys that are still on that staff that absolutely have a relationship with Drew Sanders. So there is some connection there. I talked to someone last night that's very well plugged in the Dallas area. And there are people at Ryan that very much believe he's going to go to Oklahoma. Now, again, in most cases from the places I'm hearing, and I'd be like, well, okay, he's going to Oklahoma. I'm not convinced because this is Drew Sanders and he's just very hard to read. And I think, again, I don't want to fall into the same trap I'm mocking others for. I'm not going to assume anything as fact, but like where OU is.
What was the situation there with Alabama? Just not a good fit. Kind of saw the writing on the wall. Maybe wasn't going to get onto the field as early as he expected.
Wasn't he playing early and then he got hurt?
Yeah, he started against who did they have in the season opener?
Miami.
Yeah, he started that Miami game, and from what I gathered, played pretty well. I won't say that I watched it closely or anything, but it seemed like he was okay. And then he, like Kerry said, he did get hurt, and then, you know, as we all saw on Monday night, Dallas Turner is a thing. So No shame in Dallas Turner taking your job. He's going to take a lot of jobs in the next 20 years of his NFL career. So he is a absolute monster. And I think, you know, Sanders just said, okay, I can be a role player here that could start at 125 other universities, you know, or I can go to one of those schools, be a starter, and probably, you know, Drew Sanders is an NFL talent. It's just one of those deals where he didn't want to sit behind Dallas Turner because, like I said, I mean, it's not unlike, you know, if Clayton Smith had come in the year behind Nick Benito, he probably would have left just because, you know, nothing wrong with it. Nick Benito is just really good, and that's okay. So I think Sanders just, you know, and that's the other thing. Clearly Oklahoma has some opportunity, but guys, how well does Drew Sanders, I've wondered this question about Clayton Smith, and I wonder the same about Drew Sanders. In the Alex Grinch scheme, perfect, plug and play. Yeah. You know right mm-hmm. where he's going.
Yeah,
I don't know where he fits.
I was about to ask what spot.
And that's the deal to me. And again, Brent is a little more varied than the guy we remember from his Oklahoma days where it was just four down, period, flat out, no exceptions. There, he does some three down stuff. He'll stand up his end sometimes. He'll do some different things, but those ends are 270 pounds, and that's not Clayton Smith or Drew Sanders. And it's just interesting. Like I don't know. I mean, clearly OU's bringing him in today as we talk on Thursday. So there are plenty of things that are going to work fine, but it's just. I mean, that Oklahoma thinks they can make work, but it's going to be interesting to see how they actually implement it.
How much can the portal affect what you think might happen with the rest of 2022? Is that like, is it going to be one of the things where maybe guys, they were recruiting the last 3-4 weeks and then all of a sudden they just drop off because they found the answer in the portal?
Well, you know, I know even before Bob, we had talked some about Caden Story, the Auburn yep. Commitment maybe coming in this weekend. I have literally, as we've been doing the pod, there is some belief that maybe he won't come in this weekend. So I'm wondering if that's connected to how they feel about maybe some of their other guys they're in on, you know, scholarship numbers getting a little tighter. Or, you know, it could just be, you know, some of the movement. I mean, obviously Auburn's defensive line coach is now at Clemson. You know, maybe Story goes in the opposite direction of a lot of the Clemson staff now in Norman. So there's a lot of ways that can play, but I do think that, I mean, it feels very much to me like as much emphasis they're putting on the portal, they're trying to get all that they need for the season of 2022, and then really put all their chips in 2023 recruiting. I think Brent, you know, it's kind of, it's something an old coach, you know, used to say all the time, like, yeah, you know, you get you make a mistake with a 4-year player. He's your mistake for 4 years. You make a mistake with a portal guy, then, you know, he's come and gone. I mean, if Daniel Parker Jr. doesn't work out, no big deal. He's gone next year. You get the wrong high school tight end, you could be stuck with him for 4 or 5 years, you know, if he chooses to stay. So there's a lot of ways that can all play. But I think 2022, they're trying to be very particular. Like, we know we like these guys. We're familiar with them. They're going to be good locker room guys. You know, I think as recruits, they have to check a few more boxes than maybe some of the portal guys that, you know, are kind of, you know, in and out type guys, the you know, the Jackson players, the Jeffrey Johnson, and those guys. I'm not saying they're bad locker room guys. I'm just saying I don't think it's is heavily factored into the decision making.
And so we saw yesterday they offered R. Mason Thomas officially. So we assume Ahmad Moten and Thomas still check those boxes.
That's absolutely my expectation. Now, I will say, talking to Mason, he made it sound like that it happened either a long time ago or right? a little while Didn't ago. Yeah. And he goes, I just forgot to tweet it out when it happened. Now, he and I haven't had a chance to sit down and specify when it did happen. But I will say, I haven't heard anything to make me think that those two aren't still absolutely guys they are comfortable with and confident about. So I think that's going to play just fine. But it is, like I said, nonetheless, it is interesting because we've just never had to deal with this, like where there is, you know, such a balancing act between the portal and the high school guys, and certainly never where it felt like the portal guys were a little bit more on the, you know, urgent side of things than it, right, than the high school recruits.
There's just so much movement going into this weekend. And oh, by the way, it's also a weekend in which, I guess for the first time, this staff will be together, right? Like, this is the, with the announcement coming on Monday, you know, that Oklahoma had finalized its staff, this will be the first weekend that they've all been able to be together and recruit together.
It really is. And they're continuing to add support staff. You know, they announced, or today, the, you know, a kind of official announcement of something I think we all expected was LaDainian Washington becoming an offensive analyst at Oklahoma, a guy that's, you know, played at Missouri, spent a lot of time around that program. And, you know, we've talked about it for several weeks. I continue to hear they are going to bulk up the support staff. I mean, you know, I think it ended up in the war room. Did you guys see the screenshot of the Georgia coaching, yes, staff? It was like,
Eddie sent that to us. Yes.
40 support staff guys or something like that. Like, I'm not telling you tomorrow OU's going to have a roster that long of coaching staff, but it feels like it will build at least in that direction. Like, I don't think they're going to, you know, have two offensive and two defensive, you know, analysts and a couple of interns working in their personnel department. It feels like that's all going to grow.
Because of all the transfer portal stuff, has it kind of gone under the radar, just the type of staff as a whole that we can talk about that Brent Venables has put together, especially on the defensive side of the football? Like, I know that we've spent time on it, and it's going to take some time for, you know, obviously that staff and everything to come together on the field, but it just seems like nobody's talked about it because there's been so much other, I guess, sexier things to talk about.
Well, I agree, Eddie. And, you know, I think for though, you know, and I had some questions in board chat, like, is the program in trouble? Like, is it going in the wrong direction? I don't think there's any better litmus test of that than college coaches. And you look at a guy, you know, and Jay Valai, you can get into the, you know, how things ended in Alabama or whatever. Bottom line is Nick Saban hired that guy a year ago, and now he's coming to Norman to be your corners coach. You've got a safeties coach that has a lot of connection to Oklahoma, but he's a former defensive coordinator. He could have gone a lot of places, and he's going to come coach safeties in Norman and Brandon Hall. Todd Bates, like we talked about last week, maybe as big a position coach hire as was made all season. I mean, that was a huge move for OU to be able to get him. And, you know, then you throw in all the offensive staff that could have gone lots of places just because of their connect, you know, whether it's USC or getting other jobs that, you know, places that want to learn the things Lincoln Riley does or be around the guys that he wanted on his staff. You know, those, you can look at it any way you want to, but this staff is very good. And I would say in a lot of ways, probably more complete than its predecessor. Like, and, you know, we know I liked a lot of pieces of that previous staff. I'm not saying that that's the case, but I don't see as many, you know, like when you get into recruiting, and obviously that's the way I look at it, there aren't the obvious guys that you punch holes in and say, I don't know about him. I don't know how he's going to do it because people are going to doubt him for X, Y, Z. There's one guy, and I think we've all covered that. People know who I'm referencing, that there are question marks about. But at the same time, Ted Roof's a coordinator. His primary function is not as a recruiter. That's not what he's there to do. That's not his primary goal. But if he can open some doors in the Southeast for guys like Todd Bates and Brandon Hall and Jay Valai and all that stuff, then great, great. That can work in that capacity. But other than that, I mean, this is a staff that has a lot of skins on the wall as far as recruiting at a very high level.
It's a honeymoon period right now, too. Any move that Brent Venables makes, it's like, who am I to say that Brent Venables doesn't know what he's doing defensively? And he got T.D. Roof, and he brought his son in. That's more than, like, Drew Sanders, that's the reason he should have come. He's not going to play in front of TD Roof.
Is TD going to be a walk-on? That's my assumption.
That is my understanding. I kind of wonder if it's going to be a situation where, okay, you know, they've got a spot of that, you know, they get to 83 scholarships or something and then say, hey, sure, absolutely, right. You know, mm-hmm. one of these two. But my understanding is that right now he is operating as a walk-on, and then they'll see what's available, you know, once the dust kind of settles.
I mean, a pretty damn good, I'm being serious, a pretty damn good walk-on if that's somebody that you can just throw out there. You know what I mean?
Yep.
And no offense to a Brian Mead or somebody like that, but he's somebody that you want on special teams. He's somebody that I would imagine you want a part of the program as a coach's kid.
I don't think there's any doubt. And, you know, you wonder if, you know, he's one of those guys that a year from now is a graduate and is, you know, GA-ing for OU and working in that capacity, you know. And then so you start to, you know, get a guy around your program that's young and energetic and, you know, has been around a lot of different staffs and, you know, has some interesting input. So, like I said, I it makes all the sense in the world. I thought that was a very solid move for OU.
As far as team-centric stuff goes, unless there's anything else from the transfer portal that we need to add, I was just going to say, you know, the Latrell McCutcheon stuff, that was news that wasn't necessarily a surprise, right, Josh? You had kind of insinuated that you had heard some things, and is it as simple as to say his relationship or lack thereof with Oklahoma's new cornerbacks coach was one of the reasons? Is that something that can be fixed, or is that something that we consider Latrell McCutcheon probably that road is over at Oklahoma?
Latrell is a guy I like a lot, covered him a lot, always been very good to me, made time for me, that sort of thing. Knowing the personality, I would be very surprised. He is not one of those guys that kind of, you know, he's not one to wither away from something or to back down. He kind of just says, this is how I see it, and I don't really care how anyone else feels about it. That's just his personality type. And I would be very surprised if Oklahoma was ever back in the race for him. I just don't see it. And, you know, I know people say, well, you know, maybe that was a mistake. It's one player. You can't – again, I think a lot of Latrell, I think he has NFL potential – but you've got to hire the guy you felt was best for that job who, you know, could impact your team for many years rather than a guy who, you know, in his best world is going to be there two more years and then gone. So you just can't base it off that. And the good news is Oklahoma has two starting, you know, returning corners that have played at times at very high levels. So if there's a place where you could afford that hit, it's one of them.
And Graham really vouched for Belai, and like as soon as that hire was made, saying he is elite. So it's just weird how, you know, for the relationship with one guy compared to the other, you know, we always, it's going to be different. And DJ sounds like he's fired up that Jay will be coaching him now.
Yep. Oh, I know Zach Sanchez is excited about the hire.
Oh, yeah.
So that was interesting. But yeah. You know, Belai, you know, for people that don't know, I mean, guy with an NFL background, you know, coached at Texas for a year. And I know people say, oh, he's hopped around. He's kind of had the misfortune of he keeps ending up on staffs that get fired. And that's not necessarily his fault. He was at Rutgers. That went down, goes to Texas. You know, Tom Herman gets, you know, let go. And then he goes to Alabama. And obviously Nick Saban didn't get fired. But I think from what I've gathered, it sounds like Alabama had really expected to land Denver Harris, the big five-star cornerback from Houston North Shore. And there were some communication issues with how kind of Alabama was going to come down the stretch with him. And it sounds like I guess it's kind of who you choose to believe as far as how and why it played out the way it did. But there's no question that Vali has done a nice job. Landed, I mean, you know, people in Alabama are like, oh, he can't recruit. Well, he landed like a top 50 guy in the country that was teammates with Brandon Ennis last year at American Heritage.
It's their version of he can't recruit.
Exactly. Exactly. I mean, you know, Oklahoma at cornerback will take Jay Vali's problems. They will absolutely live in that world. Landed some good players at Texas. And again, it's tough to gauge on 1 year. It's just really, really hard to do that. So I think it's going to be interesting. But he's a guy with DFW background. You know, grew up in the area, played at Colleyville Heritage there in kind of the Fort Worth area. So, or I guess Arlington, Fort Worth.
Show Cody Thomas a little bit more respect than that.
Hey, we all know Bobby Wood Jr. Thomas is not a problem. Is not a problem. So. Bob was there the night the lights went out on Denton Guyer. So it was one of the best performances I've ever seen. But we're not going to get into
that. Crazy. I know. It was nuts.
That is an all-time Scoop HD production, that game.
Eddie, I remember I called Eddie that night, and I was like, that dude is unbelievable. Like, you're not going to believe the video I'm about to send you. He was just
seven touchdowns. Passing, two rushing.
The funny thing is, it sounds like, and I actually talked to Cody when he was back in Norman at a home game a couple weeks ago, or a couple months ago. He's going to start with the A's in their professional spring training. Like, he's going to start with the big league team.
He should. I mean, at some point, he's got to get a chance. All the dude's done is rake. So, I mean, you know, I get that the Dodgers outfield was just crowded, but still, man, that dude has hit at every level.
Getting traded from the Dodger system was the best thing that ever happened to him. Something tells me he was never going to unseat Mookie Betts.
Yeah, which what I was saying with Drew Sanders and Dallas Turner earlier, there's no shame in that. There's no shame in maybe you not being able to beat out possibly the best outfielder in baseball. So that's all right. There's still a lot of room between very good and, you know, I can't beat him out. So. I don't even remember where we're going, but yeah,
just with Vali and Colleyville Heritage and just kind of his connection back into the DFW area.
Sure. And like I said, I have heard a lot of good reviews from him. He's a very, he's a guy that coaches seem to respond to, really like, so that kind of helps you as you're trying to get guys on campus, you know, wanting them to pay visits, because, you know, that was something Brent Venable said in that opening press conference, is we want to prioritize guys coming in and visiting us, seeing us, and letting us, you know, get to know them. And I think Vali is the kind of coach that can help with that, kind of embody that a little bit.
Very good.
Man, I feel tapped out. We went through it all.
Yeah. I mean, I think that it's kind of like, and I think Bob, you just kind of quote tweeted something on Twitter that is probably pretty true. It seems like we have officially made the transition into portal season, or from portal season to visit season. And now it's just about kind of seeing how everything kind of, how the chips fall. Like, it's now everything is out there as far as guys that are making visits, wanting to go see other places as far as the transfer portal offers. And now it's just about kind of letting everybody go make those visits and seeing where everything kind of lands. I can tell you, just in the time that we've been recording this, Texas feels pretty confident about Mario Williams, and they're particularly crazy from the baseball side of things. Mm-hmm. It sounds like they feel like, you know, that they have kind of presented him with something to at least think about. It's going to be interesting to see how that kind of unfolds. And, you know, just, I guess, lastly on my side, just from a team side, I was talking to a couple other people. School starts on Tuesday of next week.
Yep.
There are a lot of guys, particularly on the defensive side of the ball, that are excited to, and I know, be careful what you wish for, but are excited to get going with Schmidt. I know that there's a lot of guys that have been putting in kind of their own time in the weight room, trying to mentally and physically prepare, because they know what is about to come and they've been warned. But it's going to be kind of fun here over the next, you know, specifically this weekend with everybody that's coming in. You know, transfer portal and high school wise, and then obviously into next week. And, you know, before we know it, we're going to be doing pro days, and you know, that'll kind of lead into spring football. So
I need to confirm the date of when you can still enroll. We know classes start Tuesday, and the ideal scenario is they're enrolled and they're starting, but we know there's a grace period. I need to go back and look at when that grace period ends to when you have to be enrolled. Because
usually
there's no way they get all these portal guys in by Tuesday. That's just I just can't see that happen, that going that quickly.
Usually that's a situation that you have a couple weeks, right?
Yes.
Like I'm looking at it right now. The final day to I don't know, that's graduating seniors. I'd have to look. The final day to drop classes is January 31st. So yeah, you'd have about
2 weeks.
2 weeks.
Mm-hmm. 2 weeks.
From the start of the semester coming up on
Tuesday. Get all your paperwork. Yep.
Because Monday is Martin Luther King Day. So it will be it's gonna be kind of fun over the next couple of weeks to kind of follow how all of this goes. And obviously with the new staff in place and them being able to, you know, host people and all that kind of stuff, it should be good. Is there anything on the football side before we jump over to hoops that we need to get into that we haven't?
Guys, I know this is tough on Josh, but we don't have time for hoops this week. I'm sorry.
Okay.
I'm not joking. Like, we're on a deadline today. I'm sorry.
Okay.
I have to go do
things.
We'll
just do our own.
We'll do our own, Eddie.
We'll do our own, Bob. That's okay.
You guys want to call each other?
Start like a thread on Twitter. You two talking back and forth about basketball.
Well, that's fine. TCU Saturday, and they have home games with Kansas and Baylor next week. So they got to win Saturday to come in feeling pretty good.
Massive week next week.
And I apologize. This is mainly my fault because we didn't get started late because I've ripped apart all of our network and I had to rebuild one just for this. So that's why Josh does not sound as crystal clear as normal. So my apologies.
Sending a cookie bouquet to Porter Moser.
Sorry.
And Porter. As I reported weeks ago, Kim Mulkey was scared of Jenny Baranchek. why she left Baylor.
To go to LSU.
But it sounds like it's been a pretty good hire. Good win for Oklahoma's women's team on, what was that, Wednesday night?
Wednesday night, yep.
So, okay. Back to you.
I know it was 83-77. That's all I can tell you about that game.
Well, that's more than...
It's because I get the emails. The fans don't, so... All right. I appreciate it, guys. Thanks to Dead Soxy. Thanks to all y'all for listening. We'll be back next week, where I'm sure we'll have a lot to talk about after a massive weekend of recruiting and transfer portals and... We'll see if Caleb Williams has a destination by then. We'll see if Jackson Dart has a destination by then. It's going to be a really fun weekend, so stay glued in to Soonerscoop.com. I will tell you guys, I believe, I'm told, I dropped off a big check, but I'm told the unofficial 40 hats will be out next week, or be Ooh. To us next week, too. I'll have to photograph them and get them in the store and all that stuff. But I would say into next week, probably have unofficial 40 merch available for you in the Soonerscoopstore.com.
Beautiful.
And Eddie, I might just give you a high crown visor. I might let you have one.
That and bitch, I'm at a bus stop t-shirts. Those are the two next steps, and then we will be...
It'll be full-time Eddie merch.
What would the word be? Yeah. I would say fully engaged, maybe even...
We might even be looking staff. At the Eddie Cruz collection soon. I don't know. What is your seltzer nickname? Or
seltzer
tag?
Nickname.
Jimmy something? What was it?
Jimmy Smooth or...
I don't remember.
I should probably... Wave Runner or something. Jimmy Wave Runner or something like that? Talking about the...
Eddie doesn't even know.
So do you need a Wave Runner collection? Is that what we need? He's stumped, ladies and gentlemen.
I was thinking about saying something, and I'm going to just go full dumb.
Okay, good. Because I don't have time to edit this week, so... All right. Thanks, everybody. Thank you, guys. I stayed out of it, which I'm sure a lot of people were happy for.
Think Eastbound and Down and that kind of scene with Kenny Powers on the jet ski.
My God. Look out, Lake Stanley Draper. Here he comes. All right. That's going to do it. We'll see you guys next week for another edition of the Unofficial 40 Podcast right here from Soonerscoop.com.